Michelle put the coffee table-sized book on the counter, and Mr. Kim put the photo of the belt plaque on the countertop.
Miss Creed has brought an interesting picture this morning.
What's this? Wait, is this that cursed belt plaque you wrote about?
Harry Kim triumphantly turned the book around for Anya's inspection. The book lay open to a page that showed a black-and-white photograph of five Chinese men, wearing dungarees, suspenders, boots, and ragged shirts, standing in front of a hole in the earth that had a wooden sign over it. The wooden sign had Chinese characters on it and the outline of a striking tiger that looked similar to the one on the belt plaque. Kim tapped a finger on the second man from the left.
This is Ban Zexu.
Anya placed her backpack on the floor and took out a jeweler's loop to examine the photograph. Upon better observation, she determined that the tiger image was remarkably similar to the one she'd found. Ban Zexu looked very young. His face was grim and hard, like there'd been little in his life to smile about.
What do you know about Ban Zexu?
Not much. He left a small town outside of Shanghai in the 1870s and came to Gold Mountain. That's what they called California.
How do you know about him?
He's not the only one whose history I'm familiar with.
Kim stabbed at the page in the book with his finger.
This man's name is Kim Chonghuan. He was my great-grandfather. He traveled to America from Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, he learned to speak and write English while working for a newspaper man. Back in those days, journalists wrote long and involved stories, not like the small pieces they write these days.
Speaking of long and involved stories, you're about to hear one, Anya. I think I'd better get coffee and rolls for us after all.
Michelle kissed her father on the cheek and headed for the door.
So, let's talk about curses, shall we? Wait here.
Harry Kim bustled through a doorway and returned carrying a box filled with journals and letters. Drawing out an old hardbound journal covered in neat handwriting with occasional illustrations, he began to leaf through the pages.
When he learned the English language, my great-grandfather chose to practice every chance he got. After all, the United States was going to be his adoptive country. He also learned the craft of reporting from the English journalist.
This is amazing. Has anyone else seen these books?
Several of my ancestors' writings have been published in various journals and periodicals. I don't think Kim Chonghuan would have believed his work would be published like this, but I think he would have been proud.
I think you're right.
Anya stopped at a photo of ships in a harbor. Several of the vessels listed at their anchorages, but a few others had been hauled on shore and bore hand-lettered signs advertising lodging or food. A careful notation beneath the illustration read, San Francisco, 1851.
You've heard about the ships, haven't you? How they were abandoned in the harbor when the crews ran off to the gold fields?
Yes.
Entrepreneurs pulled some of those ships onto the shore and turned them into hotels and restaurants. Kim Chonghuan was fascinated by that. It was the first thing he saw upon his arrival. Two of the books he wrote are about those days in San Francisco. One before he left for the gold fields, and one after.
But Ban Zexu was killed in a fire, correct?
Indeed. Kim Chonghuan was there and nearly died himself. That incident, when the white miners killed Ban Zexu and the others, convinced my great-grandfather to return to San Francisco. He became a cobbler and an investor in other businesses. For a while, he lived quite well.
Kim laid the heavy book on the table and went back to flipping through the pages carefully.
Ah, this is where Kim Chonghuan first met Ban Zexu.
Anya was content to listen as Kim read the words his ancestor wrote. The century and a half that separated the two men seemed to disappear.
February 25th, 1872. While at the market this morning, I met a man new to America. My heart went out to him because I hadn't seen a more bedraggled specimen in years. He wore homespun cotton pants and shirt that I knew had come from China. He carried a cloth bag that I was certain held all his worldly possessions. From the timid way he comported himself, I knew that he had no friends and no English. Even though my own situation was distressing, I couldn't leave such a sad fellow to his own devices. I went to him and talked to him. He seemed at once very relieved and grateful. When he told me he had no prospects and had come to California to get wealthy digging for gold, I wanted to laugh at him and hug him at the same time. I've seen so many, American and Chinese alike, who came to this place thinking exactly that. Most are easily discouraged, but many, like this man, were truly desperate for success. His name was Ban Zexu.
Did Ban have the belt plaque with him then?
Indeed. See here.
Kim flipped through the pages of the old book, looking for the next entry. In the meantime, Anya was somewhat surprised to see that Michelle had returned from the bakery. She had been too absorbed in Kim's narrative to notice. Michelle offered her a warm roll with a smile.
March 3rd, 1872. My new partner, Ban Zexu, has had a hard time adjusting to life in San Francisco. He has the air of a hunted man, but I know of several who barely escaped the wrath of the British, French, and Americans in Shanghai. San Francisco is rife with men who were outlaws one day and gold miners the next, but this is still a far better place than China. Today, after too much liquor, Ban Zexu revealed to me a thing of beauty he claims has been in his family for hundreds of years. It is a belt plaque, like one of those worn by the Emperor's guards. I believe it is a badge of honor. Ban Zexu tells me that one of his ancestors once did a courageous act for Emperor Ling of the Han Dynasty. When I asked him what this courageous act was, he refused to tell me. I have sketched to the best of my ability the belt plaque Ban Zexu protects. Regrettably, because of the confidence extended to me by my new friend, I have been unable to pursue this matter among my colleagues who might know more of its origins.
Anya studied the drawing. Kim Chung-Hwan had been meticulous and faithful in his rendering.
I would say that the sketch there is a good match for the photograph you showed me.
So would I.
Kim Chung-Hwan was much intrigued by the belt plaque.
Aren't we all?
You'll see here that he uncovered part of the story from another man who also saw the belt plaque. July 5th, 1872. Last night I got a glimpse of the secret that Ban Zexu carries with him. Though I am ashamed because I have broken, at least in part, the promise I made to him. Ma Bian, one of the old men who aided me when I first came to this country, was speaking with me this evening. We often talk about things we have seen and heard. We also drank, which was why I was more talkative than I normally would have been. In this conversation, I brought up the belt plaque design. Worse yet, I sketched it out for him on a piece of paper. Ma Bian didn't recognize the design, but he recognized the style of artwork. He said the Chinese didn't invent it, that it was first used by people he called the Scythians. Ma Bian said those people traded with our ancestors, and they made the style part of our culture. I didn't disagree with my good friend, for he knows a great deal of these matters. But I doubted that someone else had invented that look, because it has been part of the China I have always known. The part that troubles me is the small insignia in the upper left corner of the belt plaque. Ma Bian said that the upside-down fish signifies a curse.
Anya studied the drawing that Kim Chung-Hwan had sketched. After a moment, she spotted the hourglass shape of a fish she hadn't noticed. It was upside down. Anticipating her next move, Harry Kim slid the photograph she had taken across the table. Anya picked up her jeweler's loupe again and studied the picture. It took her a moment to find the engraving. It had been concealed by dirt that filled in some of the lines.
The fish?
Yes.
Anya removed the loupe, wishing she had the actual belt plaque in front of her. She had been so intent on confirming that the piece was of Scythian design that she hadn't even noticed the fish. The lines had faded dramatically from the time Kim Chung-Hwan had seen the belt plaque.
In China, fish are believed to bring good luck, but placed as that one is, upside down, as if in a state of death, the opposite would result. Here, listen to this.
Kim turned his attention back to the journal.
Ma Bian said that the object I had drawn had a curse upon it. When I asked him who would curse such a thing, Ma Bian had no answer for me. He said he would have to know more about the object, but that it may have been the work of a thieves' guild. I didn't ask him how he came by such knowledge. I have to ask myself, though, why Banzai Shu would choose to carry around a cursed belt plaque. I don't know if I will ever get the answer.
Your great-grandfather never found out anything more about the belt plaque?
No, and it has always puzzled me since I first read these books. I've tried to find information on that drawing, but without luck. I've researched the upside-down fish as well, but so far I have not been able to substantiate where it might have come from.
Perhaps the fish could have been added at a later date. The engraving looks to have been done by a different artist.
I agree. My ancestor believed it was the curse on the belt plaque that killed his friend.
If it was cursed, why didn't Banzai Shu simply get rid of it?
I don't know. In the journals, my great-grandfather mentioned that there were times when Banzai Shu was in debt from gambling and took beatings rather than give up the belt plaque to settle the debt. One entry mentioned a man taking the belt plaque from Banzai Shu only to return it the following day.
Do you know that there was writing on the back of the belt plaque? I have a picture here.
I have never heard such a thing.
Anya reached into her backpack and brought out a photo she'd printed of the back of the belt plaque. Excitement shone in Harry Kim's eyes. Anya would understand why soon enough.